So that topic was suggested to me, and I have to admit that I am willingly ready to talk about this, and I would like to invite you to shift the focus now a little bit and to add something which we did not yet talk about, that is, let's say, environmental problems, because we have the term of sustainability. But what I would like to do is to introduce to you a kind of framework in which sustainability can be seen in a broader sense. So all of you know that sustainability is said to rest on four pillars, that is not only on the ecological aspect, but also on the economic, on the social, and also on the institutional pillar. I would like to introduce to you a framework which is based on systems theoretical thinking, in which you can link all this stuff together. And that is, so we are now talking about global challenges, and what Johannes talked about before is something which is very closely related to the global challenges and is itself also a challenge. So I just want to broaden the scope of the discussion a little bit. I would like to share with you an experience of mine. Last week, on Friday, I attended a conference in Vienna. They have a conference series there, which is called Conference on Consciousness, but they always have different, very different aspects of consciousness there. And at that time, that is last Friday, the conference topic was Homo Ecologicus. And so it was about the environmental problems and how this affects also our ethical approaches to these environmental problems. And it was clearly stated that this, I think there was unisono, one big message, and the message was, yes, there are big environmental problems, and if you talk about the climate change, so it is nearly clear that we are inside the climate change and that it is due to human actions, and we have to do something about this, and therefore the old conceptualization of human as Homo economicus is outdated. It is wrong by construction. It is an ideology. It is just to save certain interests, and it is empirically false. It is already falsified. So, but the problem we face is, what about this awareness? Who is aware of that? And then interesting data were presented. Some of them belong to Austria. And so they had made a survey, and they found out that in the public, a big percentage is aware of all this ecological stuff, of this environmental stuff. But if you then find out what is the awareness of those who are in charge of changes, or should be in charge of changes, that is the politicians, there were only a very small percentage that are aware of that. And the second to them is, the second least to them in awareness are the administrations. So that's the problem that is faced. And if we look at, for instance, Cancun now, so we see how problematic the issue is. Okay. I would like to go through this. That is, first I would like to tell you how I approach ethics. Second, I would like to present this framework to you, which is a systems perspective, and I have to admit this is my systems perspective, so you could do it also in another way. And I want to talk about globalization, about sustainabilization, and about informationalization, and how these three hang together. And this is just to sum up. So first, about ethics and about the conceptualization of man. So one of my favorite philosophers, Edgar Morin, he's still alive. I think next year he will celebrate his 90th birthday. He said some 10 years ago in his manifesto for the new millennium, we are unable as yet to control our own nature, whose madness impels us to mastery over nature while losing our own self-control. And I think this is a very good sentence in which all of this issue is condensed. And he calls this picture of man, or this conceptualization, he says, we are not only Homo sapiens, we are Homo sapiens demons. That is, we have, so to say, two faces. We can, on the one hand, we are taking control of nature, but on the other hand, we don't have the self-control, and therefore, we also don't have real control over nature, because this is also already a wrong concept. So, my position to ethics, I have to say I'm not a philosopher, so I just, I'm a lay here, so I just present you how I would like to approach this. That is, if we talk about the ways of thinking, that is how to relate complex things, that is a less complex idea or thing or whatever to a more complex one, then I see there are four possibilities. And the reductionist possibility base ethics is called the naturalistic fallacy, and this would mean that from facts there is something following which are norms. Then there is the opposite, and the opposite would be a projection. And then there would be a third possibility, which is also not very satisfying, which would say, okay, these two things are disparate and you can't bring them together. So my suggestion is, I just call it emergent ethics. That is, there is emergence. Emergence happens always if there is something which is a necessary condition. And so to say, supervenient to this necessary condition, there's something else which is based upon this, but which is contingent in a way. That is, it could be one way, or it could be also another way. So, and I think that it is in that way that I would like to approach ethics. That is, values cannot be reduced to facts. So if we have certain facts, then you still can have different values, but not in a way that every value would relate to the facts. That is, it's like, for instance, like laws, like law in society. Law in society for me are laws in societies are dependent on the historical context, so they are always adjusted, they have an own evolution, and the same is with physical laws, for instance, or natural laws at all. That is, they develop also together with, for instance, with matter and with energy. So without them, there is nothing outside which would be imposed. they are dependent on what is developing. But they are, in a way, also contingent, and they could be different. A third idea I would like to show you. I'm also a fan of Ernst Bloch, who was in the surroundings of the critical theory of the Frankfurt School. And he saved the idea of utopia. And this is related to what I just talked about, this emergent approach to ethics. That is on the necessary conditions and on things who will emerge above or on the basis of these necessary conditions. So if we talk about reality, then we can find that there is also a kind of space of possibilities. That's the space of possibilities. He calls it potential. So if we approach the future, then we try to make one of the possibilities which are there actual. And in doing it actual, we have a leap in quality, which means it is emergent, because it is contingent in a way, because it could be one possibility or another possibility. But what is actualized is always something which was before potential. Bloch said that this is now a very important aspect here, because if we fancy utopia as something which would be nice, it could be possible that we don't find ways to realize it, and that would mean that it is something we never will come there, and therefore it is called utopia because it is nowhere. But he said this is nonsense. What we need to do is we need to be more pragmatic. That is, we need to find the possibilities which are here and now already. And therefore, he said, we want to come to a betterment of society. That is, we also find out that, or we evaluate what is realized now is something which has to be improved, and therefore we have also another leading quality. We want to come to something which is better, and the better is always the enemy of the less good. And what we see here is that what is better is also or has to be in the space of the possibilities. If it would not be in the space of possibilities, then it would be a utopia which could not be realized. Therefore, it is necessary that it is already there as a potential in the here and now. And he calls it the not yet. So, and he says the not yet is something that foreshadows, so to say, from the future into the here and now. You find in the reality of today possibilities which can be realized and which then would be dominant in the future. So, to improve a social system it needs both an ascendance from the potential to the actual and an ascendance from the less good to the better. After and both are not yet foreshadows a possible better future. Okay. So, now let's start with the second part of my talk, which is about my system's perspective on sustainability. And first I want to talk about the aspect of globality and globalism. So, what we find now, today, can be conceived from a systems perspective as a kind of a meta-system transition. This is a term which was introduced by Francis Heiligen from the Free University of Brussels and in Brussels and some years ago, so I think in the 90s. This means you have already some different systems which connect and interconnect, and at a certain point they might form a new system which is already also a leading quality. This is what we now see, what happens as to the evolution of humankind. But this is something which is not yet done. So we are just on the point of doing this. So the world society which emerges is something which is possible, which might become the super system of what still is not there. And we have, there's a kind of bifurcation here. Either we have a breakthrough to a new world society, or there might be a breakdown of all these societies we have so far. And that means that this globalized society, in order to be perpetuated, it must be sustainable. That is, it has to be restructured in a certain way. And that means that all these component societies have to restructure themselves. They have to find themselves as an element of this new overall society, of this world society. That is, as in each metasystem transition, if something becomes an element of a system, it has to give up certain kind of sovereignty or autonomy. So it has a relative autonomy only in order to be a member of this new group. So globalization can be defined as a process of forming a world society by establishing or strengthening the interdependencies of the component societies, which is called globality. But this is only half step, this is only half of it, and by integrating them. So what is needed is the integration of these interdependent societies. So it's a possible step in the evolution of humanity, and it can be accomplished only if the system as a whole is made sustainable. And if the whole system should be sustainable, this means that also its member societies need to be sustainable. So now we have set the stage for sustainability. What is now sustainabilization? I found this also in the literature, which is a process of making society sustainable. So, self-organization is the term which is central to evolutionary systems thinking or to complex systems thinking. So it's the process of how systems are developing. We can sketch a kind of evolutionary step diagram, which means that on the one hand we can discern certain phases in evolution, but also on the other hand we find that there are layers, that there are levels which are in German it is Schichten, aufgeschichtet. Geschichte ist eine Geschichte. So that is, layers are made by history. So if you dig into if you are an archaeologist, you find the layers which are due to the history. So let's just talk about these three big areas of what science is dealing with. So on the one hand, we have the material systems, this would be due to the physical chemical phase of our universe, and it would contain the physical chemical level. But then there is life sciences. What are they doing? So they are dealing with living systems. Living systems are also material systems, but they are a special case of material systems, and they make a biotic level in the structure of our world of today. And we have, last not least, human systems or social systems, which signify a social phase in the evolution, at least of our planet. And yeah. So, all of that is driven by self-organization. And self-organization means, as I already exemplified with the problems of Bayesian ethics, that there is emergence, that you have leaps in quality which occur, but which are not necessitated to occur. So they are contingent. But once they are there, they build the basis for another emergence, for the emergence of another quality. So in order to show that all of that is self-organization, is one mechanism, so to say, but mechanism, I don't like the word because it resembles us, it reminds us of mechanical systems, and I don't want to speak about mechanical systems. So I want to show that there is one big driver, let's say, of evolution, but on the other hand, that this driver itself is developing, and that it has different steps of evolution. And in order to make this clear, we have developed, going back to Aristotle and his four causes, a scheme in which we talk about indirectedness and about the formative power. And that means that we can now find out that there are different kinds of self-organization, and the most primitive one, the most primitive type of self-organization is called, after Prigogine, the dissipation. And that means you have here dissipative systems which convert, which have energy, and by energy they try to build order and also to sustain it a little bit. And this is called self-referentiality. That is, you find that there is a micro level and a macro level. And both are related to each other, and therefore you have a kind of self, they relate to each other. So this is a kind of this is a kind of how the formative power is working in that system. And on the other hand, you also can say, okay, what about the end? Well, a certain end is realized by these systems. So these are not mechanical systems. These are self-organizing physical systems. Okay. Then you have another step. And these words are going back to Meyer. He talks about teleonomics in that case, which means, okay, if you have these autopoietic systems, we heard already today a little bit about it, so they have an inbuilt end, so the end is implicit, and what they are doing, I call it self-reproductivity. So reproduction not in the sense of the biologists, but in the sense of sociologists, which means that reproduction means that a system is reproducing itself. So the form is perpetuated, and then we have systems in which we really find teleology, okay, difficult, sorry, in English. And these theological systems really have an explicit end, that is, you can set goals. And this is typical and characteristic of human systems. And human systems are not only we as individuals, but also the social systems we are building and we are part of. And this is due to Jansch, who was an Austrian philosopher. He called it re-creation, re-creation, in order to differentiate it from recreation. And re-creation means that these recreative systems are a special kind of autopoietic systems. So autopoietic systems are systems which in which the components are organized by the system to produce new components. So by that it can perpetuate its form, though the components might change. And if we come to the human systems, recreation means it is a special case of autopoiesis, and that is that that means that humans try to adapt their environment. That is, not only they adapt to their environment as any biological, as any living system does, but it also tries to change the environment, to alter the environment. And by changing the environment or by altering the environment, there's also a repercussion on the humans themselves, which means that they change themselves. So you have a cycle which is like a dynamic in which both sides of this cycle are changing. And that is meant by recreation by Erich Jansch. Now we can talk about sustainability. So it's stability. So systems are stable. So there are different kinds of stability which you can fix according to the types of self-organization you're talking about. So material systems, you might use the term of robustness, that is, they are robust as long as the self-reference cycle is not broken up due to outside perturbations or disturbations or disturbances. The second, resilience is a term which comes from ecology, and it means the succession, there are succession cycles of ecosystems. For instance, if a wood burns down, then it starts again with grass, and then there are bushes, and then 10 or 20 or 30 years later, then you have already the beginning of the trees, and the wood is already here. This is not, I use this term not only to signify ecosystems, but each living system, which means it is very flexible, because if components produce components which make the system, so the system can itself repair. That is, it is flexible, it can recover, and it can bounce back to disturbances which come from the outside. And now, sustainability would be the kind of stability of human systems. And this is, as I told, a very delicate relationship between the evolving system and its natural subsystems. So this would be the subsystems of the social systems. And that means that I do it in another way, that ecologists are sketching the figure. Often you talk about environment, and you say the environment is something different. So the system is in an environment. The environment is outside of the system. But in my case, the system is including the environment. That is the living environment, and that is the physical environment, which belongs to our society, because our society is already deeply intertwined with nature, so to say. So that's sustainability, seen from a point of view of evolutionary systems. So we can define sustainability as a stability of the social self-organizing systems, and the recreation is stable if it takes care of the necessary conditions to be recreated in order to start the recreation cycle anew. Okay, that means a kind of reproduction is necessary. That is, if the self-constitution of humans is dependent on the so-called environmental or natural conditions, then in order to go on for the whole system, it is necessary that the starting conditions can be met. And so far they have been met by nature itself, because nature could reproduce, and then man could again start a new production cycle, but today it is not anymore so. That is, we also have to intervene into the reproduction cycle of nature in order to have the starting point for a new production cycle, or for the production of human in this wider sense. Okay, second, what do I understand by self-organization? Just seeing if we look at a certain system. So it's an organization, and there are components, and you have an upward causation and a downward causation, and you have the elements. So this is on the micro level. The elements, they work together, and in working together they produce a macro level, they produce the system on the macro level, and the macro level on the other hand exerts a downward causation on the elements. So you have this feedback loop, what I call self-referentiality, which is already there in dissipative systems, in very primitive self-organizing systems. If we talk about social systems, then the elements are agents, and normally you talk about individuals, but it could be also different social subjects, like institutions. These agents interact, that's the behavior of them, and by the interaction the system is produced, which is called in sociology structure. Sometimes, for instance, in Marxist, with Marxist background, you call it societal relationships, which are the outcome and the medium of the actions. And the downward causation is something which might be called socialization in sociology. So you have the difference between the process, which is inside, so to speak, inside the system, and you have the structure, which is called the level of the system. This process has two aspects in social systems. The one aspect is a reproduction, that is, it keeps going. But on the other hand, you can also have transformative actions. That means the actors can transform society, especially if they do it willingly. And that means that you have a cycle which goes back. And so all of that is changed, and it can, so you get an evolution in that direction if you follow the timeline, and the system can change. So what we have today now, we find out that there is a kind of world society in statum ascendi on the macro level, and it shows that it is there through the interconnectedness and by the global challenges we have. And on the other hand, what we need is we have to readapt, we have to restructure the whole structure, the whole interconnectedness of these societies by a conscious build-up, and this is the step which is before us. So sustainabilization is a process of transforming a social system from one state into another state that is more stable. It transforms globality into glocalism when transforming component societies into world society. Okay, and now but I would like to come to these ethical implications. That is, first I would like to show you how I see the architecture, that is the inner structure of social systems, of society, and second, what does it mean, what is the guiding principle, that is, what is the value which is relevant for the systems which make up the whole system. So, the architecture. Okay, I think I should hurry a little bit. That is, I just start with a technological system, that is technology. You have here the macro level, which is called, can be called productive forces. There is activity which is done by humans who either innovate productive forces, technology, or use it. My framework talks about nestedness, that is, there are subsystems of society which are not floating on one level, on the same level, or on one plane. No, they are ordered in a hierarchical way, but hierarchy does not mean that the arrows are deterministic. So there are non-deterministic relationships between these different systems. So another system would be to support life. That is what is normally called the ecosystems. They provide the conditions of survival, and it is done by a different kind of activity which can be called work. And at last we have that what we call itself the social system, the society in the narrower sense, and there is, you find that sense is produced, sense is constituted through action, and this sense is then also provided to the members of society. So you have this loop, which is the most important loop of what society is doing. If we look now into society, into these social systems, we also find a specification hierarchy. That is, we find the economic systems, and they are about wealth. So the goods are produced, or services are produced and allocated. Then we have the political systems in which regularities are existing. That is, there are decisions which are made, and it's about power. It's about political action, and each action is authorized by power. And at least we have culture, in which you either are included in the definition of roles, that is, you have the hegemony or not, and you are legitimated for specific actions or not. Okay, so this is my view of society in my systems view. And now, what about then? What about the values? So, if we take the first system, technology, the technological infrastructure, you need not to look about this, we had this already, just look about here. So what is the guiding principle? What we want from technology is we want to augment technology to enhance or to augment our productiveness, which means it is opposed to destructiveness, which would signify alienation from technology. If we talk about the so-called environmental compatibility, we mean alliance with nature. This is also a term which was used by Ernst Bloch, or today I talked also about Ivan Illich, who talked about tools for conviviality. So that means that it should serve survivability, and as opposed to the degradation of nature. If we talk about society as a whole, in the narrower sense, sorry. So we would say, okay, there is inclusiveness, which I relate to fairness or justice, as opposed to exclusiveness. So that inclusiveness means that all the members should have access to the possibilities to produce, that is to contribute to society, and also to the provision of that what is produced. And produced is things, not only goods. So in the economic structure, I would say there is solidarity. On the political level, there is freedom, and equality is on the cultural level. So you see all these good values are there. And so we can now come to the conclusion that sustainabilization is a process of putting society in a position to avoid anthropogenic breakdown and safeguard a stable path of development by keeping social disparities below the threshold of endangering the maintenance of society. So that's an important point. So sustainability is the big value. It's the super value. It's the norm which includes all the others. That is, if we have somewhere expropriation, if we have poverty in Africa, if we have injustice anywhere in the world, it is not anymore possible that these societies, or that the interconnectedness of them, which should build up a world society, is sustainable at all. Because it always can lead to wars, and wars today can lead to extinction of humanity. So that is, it is not sustainable to have societies which have all these social disparities in their on the different levels. And this means this is a process which is done by actions which are enacted by consciousness. That is, it has to be a conscious process. And therefore it needs information, information or knowledge or whatever you want to talk about it. Therefore the third element which is necessary here is informationalization. And this is a term I try to coin in contradistinction to informatization. So informatization is just the spread of ICTs, of information technologies and information and communication technologies in the society. So it's a rather technological oriented term. But by informationalization, I mean that that we need information which makes the whole of society, the world society, and all its compartment societies capable of dealing with the problem of sustainability. That is a process of informationalization. This is what I would coin like this. The problem is that these two processes are related. So on the one hand, it's good because ICTs provide us with the means also to provide relevant information, relevant for the survival of mankind, relevant for getting rid of all the social disparities we have, which are the causes for a non-sustainable development here and for the crisis. But on the same hand, there is a kind of dialectic. That means that the ICTs, that informatization is also part of the problem and not only of the solution. That is, they are like like catalysts. So that is, they amplify existing social disparities and they create new ones. And that means that if we look at at the level of technology, so the internet might raise productiveness via automation, but on the other hand, you also have the vulnerability of the information society, which can be raised if we look about ecology, you can have this control revolution in two ways. Either it optimizes material and energy flows, or it raises the degradation of the environment just by computers. And I can tell about this because I'm working in the Department of Informatics of the Vienna University of Technology. If we talk about the social structures in which the new technologies network the people, we can raise the inclusiveness and we can turn people into netizens and into world netizens and into informed world netizens. But on the other hand, we can also raise the divide between the information rich and the information poor. And if we talk about economy, so knowledge is something which is very important. So on the one hand, we can respect that there are knowledge commons, or there should be knowledge commons, or on the other hand, we can form information monopolies. We can empower people if we talk about policy in the age of the internet, or we can extend surveillance and we can wage information wars. And if we talk about, lastly, the culture, so we can talking about a new sphere, which means a sphere of reason, or we have this disinfotainment and we have this mediated mass manipulation, what we just had. If you think about this accident which happened at the show in Germany, the Wetten Das, where somebody hit, so it was clear that sometime this happens. And this is what the people are presented, and they don't think about the climate change. So informationalization is a process of raising the problem-solving capacity of world society to a level of collective intelligence that allows for successfully tackling the problems that arise from society's own development. So, okay, this is already clear. So this is my conclusion. What we need is a global, sustainable information society. And it makes sense to put it in a scheme like this, but it is only halfway if we talk about informatization and not about informationalization, which means that we get relevant information in order to put societal development on a path which is sustainable. Thank you.